Join longtime local and social butterfly Michelle Dragony as she flits up and down the coastside on her intrepid cruiser Flame, chatting with coastal characters at every turn.
Here we are today with Mark Melville, and he is running for San Mateo County Sheriff in 2018, and he has graced our presence today by coming in. He's going to give us a little talk about who he is, where did he come from, why does he want to run for sheriff, and what are the things that are important to him as he's running. So, Mark, who are you?
Thanks, Michelle. First of all, my name is Mark Melville. I was born and raised in San Francisco. I'm the second oldest of five children. I went to Immaculate Conception Elementary School. I went to Sacred Heart High School. One of those questions that everybody wants to know, if you were born and raised in San Francisco, what high school you went to? I went to Sacred Heart, also known as SH. I started my career in law enforcement basically right out of high school. I injured both knees, so my thought of playing college football and or professional football went out the window. I was working in a gas station, and a friend of mine said that I should be a police officer. Being at that time, I was 6'3" and 310 pounds, and this was 1975. I said, well, I didn't know if I really wanted to be a police officer. But I took the test, came out number one, and I was hired. I started with the city of Brisbane here in San Mateo County. They accommodated me as I rehabbed my knees, so I got to work the records division, dispatch, all the jobs that the ancillary folks do outside of the police officers. So once I was fully healed, I started my career. I ended up going to the police academy. 1978, passage of Proposition 13 happened. City of Brisbane decided that with the reduction in property taxes, they were going to fire the fire department, and they did. So now I was a fireman. I did not want to be a fireman. So I took the test for every police department in the North San Mateo County area, and I was hired by Chief John Gonzalez of Half Moon Bay in October of 1978.
So nice twist. I love it.
Yeah, it was a nice twist. And, you know, I came to work here in Half Moon Bay, really enjoyed it. But then the city of Brisbane came back calling for me. And a couple of my friends who were now sergeants and captains told me that they had figured out the fire angle and they were going to bring me back as a police sergeant. So
nice.
I'm looking at the promotion. So I said, sure. So I go, and my first week there, I was told, oh, by the way, you have to go to the fire academy.
What?
Exactly. And it was like, oh, you guys hoodwinked me. So, but I did go to the fire academy, and I have to say that it was probably one of the best training classes I'd ever gone to, only because there's so many things that happen with fire that we as police officers get involved with, and we have no knowledge of how a situation can change on us drastically. And I only bring that to light because I did lose a good friend of mine who was a police officer in San Jose who touched a car door in an accident scene, and there was electrical wire on it, and he was killed. So I always say that no matter what, every police officer should go to the fire academy just so that they understand the dynamics of fire and electricity and such. So anyway, I stayed with Brisbane until January of 1986. A good friend of mine became police chief. As a matter of fact, he and I went to the academy together in the city of Patterson. So he was looking to hire two sergeants. I'd already been a sergeant now for 6 years. So I went and he hired me. I was his administrative sergeant. It was a great opportunity. Couple years down the road, 1988, he says, well, we're growing so big, we're going to have to promote a lieutenant. And he told me that we were going to have to go through an assessment center, which involves not only the law enforcement professionals, but also the community professionals. Insomuch as I had not ever taken an assessment center, I went down to the community of Guestine. They were hiring a police chief, and they were doing an assessment center first. Theirs was before the lieutenants in Patterson, so I took that one. Felt very comfortable meeting with the law enforcement professionals and then meeting with the community leaders. So when I came back to Patterson, I took the test. I came out number one, and I get promoted.
All right.
2 weeks later, I get a call from the city of Guestine saying the city council wants to meet with you and hire you as police chief.
Ooh.
And I went down and they offered me the job. I went back to my chief in Patterson and I told him that they wanted to hire me. And he says, take the job. He goes, you can do it. That was obviously the best vote of confidence, in my opinion, that I had received to that point in my career. So obviously I went down to Guestine in 1988, became police chief. 3 years later, the city council decided to terminate my city manager, and they made me the interim city manager as well as police chief. Hmm. 6 months into the recruiting of a new city manager, the mayor came to me and said, we have the confidence in you, and we want you to do both jobs.
Oh my.
So I reluctantly tried to convince them not to, but they convinced me too. So that's how I ended up being a city manager and police chief at the same time. And I did that until the year 2000, or actually the end of 1999, when I was recruited over by the city of Livingston. They brought me on as a city manager, but in order to keep my public safety retirement alive, they also made me the director of public safety, which oversaw the police department and the fire department.
Very interesting set of experiences.
Well, they are. I mean, it was kind of interesting because in 1993, 94, the Attorney General's office came out with an opinion that said that the two offices of the chief and city manager were incompatible. And they allowed me to continue in that capacity because they grandfathered me in because I'd already been doing it for 5 years. I appreciated that because obviously it gave me the opportunity to work with not only community leaders, but the community as a whole in both positions.
Right. That's pretty important if you're running for sheriff.
Well, yes, because I understand the process and how it works. Eventually in 2002, I decided I wanted to run for city council. So I did. There was 3 spots open. There were 7 candidates running, and I was the top vote getter. People knew me very, very well.
Sure.
Because I believe it's so important that you become a part of the community that you're in. And so I was very well liked and easily elected. But in all honesty, it proved to be the worst decision of my life.
Well,
only because I was used to doing the job, not sitting back and being one of the elected officials waiting for something to get accomplished.
Right.
And then that person who was ever the city manager or the chief wasn't going to do it the way I would do it.
Right.
So for me, that was really, really hard.
I bet.
To take on that role. Mm. And I'm a much better doer than I was as an elected official. I'd rather be doing the job. And I think that's where, you know, when you look at the sheriff, I mean, the sheriff is elected, but that's for the whole county and it encompasses a lot of different functions. And for me, it's one of those things where I would be involved in every function of the sheriff's office.
Sure. Hands on.
Hands on. And that's what I'm about.
Yeah. That sounds awesome. It's very interesting that you have both police and fire. I'm a CERT instructor, and I work with Dave Cosgrave in Half Boom Bay, Battalion Chief, and Nick Gattuso, OES, although he's not with OES in that same capacity anymore. And they often joke with each other about, you know, the different, you know, jurisdictions that they represent and how sometimes the police don't know what to do, you know, in a fire situation. But having a sheriff that knows both, I know police and fire have come a long way in the last 20 years in terms of working together, but it's really exciting that you have both of those skill sets.
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate. I learned a lot in the fire service. And I've talked to Cosgrove, and I've talked to R.A. DeLay. And I have been on joint operations with those two gentlemen. And I understand exactly what they're doing, and I understand exactly what they're asking of us in law enforcement to do. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think with everything that goes on with the CERT teams, that we can do better. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to communicate better. And those individuals and I have had those discussions because nice. We can be better. Mm-hmm. And we're not out there for, you know, the glory. Mm-hmm. We're out there to save somebody.
Right.
And that's what's important. And if we're working closer together, then we're going to be that much more successful. Yeah. And having that background enables me to walk into those meetings and be able to fully understand what's being presented.
Right, right. And so you want to run for sheriff. What motivated you? Was there a single thing that motivated you, or just a whole cascade of things?
Not a whole cascade of things. I think, you know, the sheriff, he was appointed. He hasn't run. He has to run. Our careers are almost parallel, except I don't think he's done the city manager thing like I did for 12 years. But, you know, he has his own style, mm-hmm. and I have my own style. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and badmouth him because I have no reason to. So I just think our styles are different. I have a lot of energy, and like I tell folks, I have a lot of gas in the tank. And I'm really a hands-on person. I want to involve everybody in our organization from the bottom up, not from the top down, mm-hmm. from the bottom up, mm-hmm. so that everybody has an opportunity and say in how mm-hmm. we do business. Mm-hmm. And how we get things accomplished. And to me, that's very, very important.
That sounds pretty cool. So hands-on, what are the top couple of things that you want to hands-on first, you know, in terms of your priorities?
Well, I think first of all is everybody's read the news lately. Everything that has come out with regards to law enforcement, whether we're racist, not racist, whether we're transparent, not transparent, whether we're properly trained or not. And those are the issues that we have to continuously deal with. And I believe in the body cameras. I believe in sharing the information we gather from those body cameras. Mm-hmm. I understand if it's evidence, it has to be reserved until it's concluded the court mm-hmm. Process. I understand all that. But on the other hand, I also understand that people have the right to know. Mm-hmm. I've always said this that throughout my career, that we in law enforcement do a horrible job explaining to the public what we do and why we do it and how we do it. And we need to come out and be more transparent with them. And the body cameras and the car cameras, that's a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. It's for that person, a member of the public. It's for the officer. It's for the organization. Mm-hmm. And that will make us better.
Well, accountability is a big word right now.
Well,
cameras make you accountable, right?
Yes. And, you know, and then the coupled with that goes into the use of force. As you can see, of all the cases that we've heard about throughout the United States, horrible. I mean, some of them are horrible. And it's really frustrating that we in law enforcement don't come out and tell the public when we're wrong.
Right.
We need to say we did it wrong and we will fix it. And there are training components, obviously, that are available where we can do that. And I'd like to see us do more of that.
Well, that sounds pretty exciting.
Well, it's being accountable mm-hmm. and letting people know that, hey, if something's wrong, we're going to tell you we're wrong. Mm-hmm. And we're going to tell you that we're going to fix it.
I should think that would be a much more comfortable thing for police officers, is to get into that loop where you could say that you're wrong so that you can fix it, so that you can make, I mean, well, releases yourself from the guilt or whatever it is. And
well, it's, you know, everybody makes mistakes.
Mm-hmm, right.
Nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. And if we've done something that needs to be fixed, then we'll fix it. You know, I've always told everybody that's worked for me, I want you to challenge me. And if you got a better way of doing it, let's hear it. Mm. And if it sounds reasonable, let's try it.
Mm-hmm. Great.
If it's not, I'll tell you why it's not, and I'll give you my reasons, because that's my job. My job as your sheriff is to get those deputies the tools and the training so they can go out there and do that job every day, and they can be the best that they can be. Because if they're successful, then your organization is successful. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you sound inspired.
Well, I am inspired. I get excited talking about it because it is important to me. I've been doing this for such a long time. I mean, I've been in the public eye now for 42 years, mm-hmm. and that's all I've ever known.
Yeah.
Sheriff hired me back in 2008, and it's been quite the learning experience for me, being that primarily I was municipal, now getting into the county environment and trying to understand why certain things are done certain ways, but that's how you learn.
Right.
And you absorb that, and that's what I've done. So I haven't heard of anybody else that wants to run for sheriff. I know the current sheriff is going to run. Obviously, I'm going to run. We don't know if anybody else is going to throw their hat in the ring, but that may happen.
It may. Now, I know there was one other topic that you wanted to talk about, and that was ICE and sanctuary cities. That's one of the really big critical ones right now.
Well, ICE and the sanctuary cities. You know, I my frustration has always been that somebody that has committed a crime, they've been undocumented, mm-hmm. ICE takes them right out of the jail and deports them. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, they're back. Mm-hmm. My problem is that person never paid for the crime they committed.
Right.
And that's my frustration. And I think that, you know, what happened in San Francisco, where that gentleman was deported back and forth mm-hmm. five times mm-hmm. before he ended up killing that young lady.
Right.
And my thing is that I don't care if you're documented or undocumented. If you commit a crime in this county against a resident of this county, you're going to be arrested. You're going to be prosecuted to the fullest extent possible. And you're going to serve your sentence.
Right.
And
sounds good to me.
Well, that's the way it needs to happen. Once they're released from prison, after they've served their sentence, then whatever the federal government decides to do, mm-hmm. that's up to them. Our job is to make sure that they serve mm-hmm. their time for committing their crime. And it's always bothered me, as mm-hmm. long as I've been in this business, mm-hmm. I asked an ICE agent, what's the quickest turnaround time from a guy that you've taken out of our jail, mm-hmm. dropped him off in Mexico, how long before you saw him again? You know what the answer was?
24 hours.
How about 8.5?
Oh, dear.
8.5 hours. That person never served a minute for their crime. And they just keep doing that. And that's what's wrong.
That's crazy. I actually haven't heard this angle before. That's really yeah. illuminating.
They don't talk about that
angle.
So
do you have the authority to be able to do that? Or is that a federal fight that you have to fight? Or how does it work?
You know, I think that the feds can do what the feds do. We can't stop that. But we're not going to do their job. And I don't want them to do our job. Mm-hmm. I want to arrest, incarcerate mm-hmm. until the full sentence is served and then released. Mm-hmm. Then the feds can do what they want. Okay. I mean, that's what's, I think, part of the problem. You know, the sanctuary cities is important only because, you know, there's a lot of undocumented people that won't come forward report crimes. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we want. Yeah. We want to be there to help everybody, because that's what we do.
Right.
That's what we're charged with. That's our responsibility. Mm-hmm. And we want them to come forward. Mm-hmm. So that we can go take action. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, from the both sides, they think that, you know, just because they're undocumented, that all of a sudden now that they're on a list, they end up mm-hmm. getting themselves deported. We don't create that list.
Right.
That is not even something we even bring up in our reports. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. not an issue.
That's interesting to know. I know I interviewed Jane Euster, who's superintendent of CUSD, Cabrillo Unified School District, and at the time when the school year was just starting last year, you know, it was a little tense, and I remember her talking about, you know, what the latitude in terms of law is and that everybody in the school was safe. But there were some concerns that parents were dropping their kids off, that, you know, there might be people in town, but it turned out to be all rumor.
And it was, because yes, we heard those rumors
exactly.
as well.
No, I checked 6 ways from Sunday. It was definitely all rumor.
It was all rumor.
But it still scared people.
Absolutely. You know, that is scary.
Yeah.
And that's what we don't want to happen.
And then they're less likely to, you know, go after the social services that will help kids. I mean, that's my big concern, is that the kids are the innocent ones, you know.
And the kids are so important, that, and they need to be protected. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going after their parents to get to them, or vice versa. We don't play that game. Right. We enforce the law. Doesn't matter whether you're documented or undocumented. Everybody gets treated equally.
Well, I'm glad Buzz can hear those words from your mouth. That's really cool. Thank you very much, Mark. We're going to have Mark back in again, so stay tuned. I know Mark has a super secret skill that I don't know if he's willing to share, but if he's willing to share it as we sign off, we'll just put it out there.
Well, one of my pastimes is that I imitate Elvis Presley. So that's what I do in my off time. I sing. So that's all I'm going to say right now.
All right, Mark. Thank you, Mark. Great meeting you. Look forward to seeing you again.
Oh, definitely. I'll be here.
All right. Thanks.